This is Glow in the Dark Radio. The science fiction podcast with original independent science fiction written and performed by Mike Luoma, with music by Kevin MacLeod. The Vatican Assassin Trilogy and The Adventures of Alibi Jones by Mike Luoma are available in ebook, trade paperback, and audiobook wherever you find your books online. Get links and details at glowinthedarkradio.com. This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma, and I've got the first part of Chapter 13 as we get into this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Chapter 13 is one of those mega-long chapters, almost 2 hours long as far as audio goes, so I'm going to have to divide it down into about 5 parts for you as we go through the next few weeks. A lot goes on in this chapter. A lot of stuff is revealed to BC and to ourselves as we're checking out the story. Last week, BC went to meet a Dr. Capituna, who actually turned out to be Nita fucking Bendix, the woman who had tried to kill BC and was later outed as a UIN informer, an agent, a double agent. Now she's told BC she's really a triple agent who ultimately works for a group called The Project. Now BC has decided, at least for the moment, to trust her, and he went with her on a flasher, a ship that shouldn't exist. Mysterious and fast, they appear and disappear around the moon. Well, she's taking him to the Project base on the dark side of the moon, their secret base. And as they arrived and the airlock opened, first Anita, then BC, were hit with trank darts and blacked out. So not a great start, but we will wake up with BC as we get into part one of chapter 13 of Vatican Ambassador, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. I want to thank our patrons for helping me keep the podcast going. And I would encourage you to become a patron or pick up one of my books. Especially right now, I could use your help. I've just been dealing with a roof leaking. I've got an old slate roof on my home in Burlington. And all of a sudden, in the driving rain yesterday, I started to get dripped on before I could even get the podcast going, which is why it's a little bit late right now. I'd like to get it out sooner than this, but... So, yeah, if you can help, become a patron, make a donation, buy a book, buy an audiobook. Anything you can do to lend a hand right now would be awesome. So, thank you. And again, thank you to my patrons who are doing it anyway. I am also giving away a free graphic novel this month. Your chance to get Vatican Assassin, the graphic novel, for free. It's only for podcast listeners and patrons. This is through drivethroughcomics.com. You get a free PDF version of the graphic novel. And the discount is tied to the link in the show notes. So be sure to click that link or copy and paste it so you can go to Drive-Thru Comics and get your free Vatican Assassin graphic novel. And you can do that right now, today. It tells the story from the first novel of the trilogy in comic book form. So it's a little bit condensed and slightly different, but not, you know, radically so. You could still read that graphic novel and go into Vatican Ambassador if you wanted to. Or it can remind you of some of the stuff that went on in that first novel, now that we're into the second, in a big way. We'll get into Chapter 13, Part 1, next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
The Flesh Pulp Podcast. 3 to 10 minutes of fiction brought to you thrice weekly. 200 miles below the surface of the Earth, at the terminus of a series of long sealed caverns and interconnected shrines. Under the shadow of the eternally bleeding eye, there is a crippled wreck of a man writing tales, stories of a dimension engulfed in madness. He is writing them of you. Find them all at fleshpulp.com or search for it on iTunes.
Now here's Vatican Ambassador, Chapter 13, Part 1, on Glow in the Dark Radio.
BC can hear voices as he tries to wake up. Trying to gain his trust and you shoot me? And then him? Way to go, Brainiacs. Anita Capituna. Anita Bendix, that's right. Betrayed. Fuck, what was I even thinking? Stupid. BC opens his eyes on unfocused brightness. "He's awake!" someone shouts. "BC," Anita says anxiously. "I'm so sorry. I had no idea they were going to..." "Fuck you," BC spits out in a hoarse, forced whisper. BC's eyes begin to adjust. He's lying on a plain white bed in a small blue-walled room with no windows. Anita stands next to the bed, dressed in a plain white lab coat. BC moves his hands, his legs, experimentally. "No restraints. Well, that's something, anyway. Don't feel too strong, though. Very weak. Not quite right yet. Huh. The wrist launcher is gone. What the hell was I doing trusting her?"
"Look," she protests. "They weren't supposed to... I mean, I told them not to... I didn't even think they were going to be here."
"Shit." After stopping and starting several times, she pauses, looks him in the eye.
"I'm sorry, BC. How are you feeling?"
BC ignores her. He tries to sit up. His brain feels like it's moving at a slower rate than the rest of his head as he pulls himself up. It feels like his brain stops a second too late, crashing into the inside front of his skull when he sits up straight.
"Ah, my head! What did they shoot me with?"
"You might want to keep lying down for a few more minutes," Anita says. "They injected you with an anti-reactive to counteract the sedatives in the dart, but you're probably still feeling... some of the sedative's effects. The anti-reactive itself is only just starting to take effect," Anita informs him.
"Hey, gee, thanks," BC says, lying back down. "I'm ever so, thankful, yeah."
He closes his eyes. BC hears voices talking in whispers as he lies there with his eyes shut.
"If I could only concentrate on them, it would probably be to my strategic advantage to know what they're saying. What are they saying? Can't keep my thoughts in order. Can hardly keep my head together. That murmuring is annoying. Who's talking? My head hurts. Not like those other headaches, though. Starting to feel a little better."
After about 15 minutes, BC opens his eyes again. He tries sitting up again. This time his brain behaves and moves with the rest of his head.
"Better? Better? Let's see if I can get them off guard."
Anita Capituna is across the room with her back to BC, talking to two guys, like her, wearing a white lab coat, in a small circle, the source of the murmuring. One of the guys is older, white-haired and balding, pale and thin-framed. He towers over Capituna. The other is slight, short and dark-complexioned. He gestures wildly with his hands as he tries to make his whispery point with the other two. BC clears his throat.
Ahem.
Three turn in unison. "How about some explanations?" BC says, trying to sound stronger than he feels. "You say you've got a shitload to tell me, so how about it? Let's go!" BC's shoulder throbs where the dart hit. "And let's start with why you fucking shot me, huh?"
"Okay, calm down, hothead," the short guy says, his voice a little shrill with a slight accent BC can't place.
"It was fear, BC," Anita says, cutting off the short guy. "They were afraid of you," she says as she looks back and forth between the other two.
"We know all about you," the short guy butts back in. "We know who you are, what you've done. You're a dangerous man. You were armed."
Yeah, just look at me, VC says, and a wave of nausea washes over him. And I'm feeling real fucking dangerous right now, BC says. Uh-oh, BC says. Whoa. What? The other three say in almost comical unison. I'd laugh, but I gotta puke. BC leans over the side of the bed and heaves up some nasty, bitter yellow bile that splats across the floor. Whoa. Less than I thought I'd toss. Ugh. I hope that's it. We pumped your stomach, the short guy says. Had to clear out the toxins, sorry. BC leans back up to a sitting position and wipes off his mouth with the sleeve of the standard-issue hospital gown he's wearing. He's suddenly sweating, drained, and shaking. Thanks, BC rasps. Can I get a glass of water? They oblige his request. BC sips his water and analyzes his surroundings. Half lab, half hospital room. Just the kind of place to keep a great big rat. Where am I? He manages to ask. We're in a lab complex, on the other side of the moon from Lunar Prime. We're just where I said we were going, the project base, Anita says. Yeah, BC says, voice still raspy. I got that. You're the project, or something. The tall man speaks for the first time. We are the project, he says, in a soft but firm, deep voice. We also called ourselves Kildna's Kids, or even TP as a joke. But we are the project, the Transbase Project. Only now, we do more. BC, Anita says. Meet Dr. Krishnavarti, she nods at the short guy. And Dr. Dundell, she says, indicating the older, taller man. Krish is the little guy, Dell is the tall one, she says by way of introduction. Dell is the one who shot us.
My apologies, sir, Dell says to BC. We were improvising, you see.
What's with the we? Krish says. You pulled the trigger, he protests to Dell. Dell looks down at Krish.
You thought it was a good idea, he says in a quiet, measured tone of voice. Their voices echo inside of BC's head.
Right, please, shut up, both of you, BC asks. Just don't say anything for a minute. BC winces as a headache pounds at his temples. Shit, now my head hurts. The two men look at BC, silent and hurt. BC closes his eyes. He opens them when he hears Anita make a strange noise. She's trying not to giggle, suppressing a smile while the other two glare at him. She thinks it's funny? Well, maybe kinda it is. These two, well, now at least it's a little quieter. Thank you, BC says. He closes his eyes again and rubs his temples. That's some nasty shit they hit me with. Wonder if the pain is from the dart or the antidote. BC cracks his eyes open a little. Squinting, he sees the three still standing there watching him. She is something else, man, and those two are almost comical. It'd be funnier if they hadn't just done me some serious damage. Still, hard to stay mad at them when they act like cartoon characters. BC? Anita asks, to see if he's awake. BC opens his eyes fully. Yeah? We're gonna leave you alone a bit. To rest and get your strength back, aren't we, boys? The two men turn to her in unison with questioning looks. Why don't we let the, good father rest a little while? Anita asks them. When he's ready, he can get freshened up, get dressed, and join us so we can move this whole thing forward. You two have set my timetable back, she chastises them again. You know that, don't you?
I am sorry, Anita, Dell says, inclining his head a fraction of an inch.
Sorry, Chris chimes in. You should be more yourself in about an hour, Anita says, turning to BC. In fact, you should be starting to get better right about now. How are you? Are you feeling better? BC takes quick internal inventory. Yeah, a little, I guess, BC admits. I just went through the same process you're going through now, Anita tells him. She glares at Krish and Dell, and then continues. Unfortunately, these supposed geniuses waited until I was coherent before they started to help you recover. The toxins had permeated your system to a greater degree, so we had to use more antitoxin on you. You'll be fine. It's just going to take a little bit longer for the anti-reactive to do its work. Is she for real? Maybe I'm still out and just hallucinating dreaming all this. Who the fuck is this woman? All right, let's go, she says, turning and shepherding the other two scientists out the door ahead of her. She turns back and smiles at BC as she closes the door. BC lies on the bed, alone in the room. Shot by a couple of mad scientists from the project. Anita Capatuna, if that's her real name, talking about an alien source to the mystery sickness. There's nothing to say she isn't a UIN agent, just working me.
Why did I follow her into this? Well, there is that ship, the Flasher. There's no way the UIN has that. Damn, this is a lot to swallow. Plus, I really don't like getting shot. Loss of control. But I did ride on a Flasher, didn't I? Sure seemed like it.
BC drifts off. He wakes up with a start.
How long was I asleep? No clock in the room.
BC sits up in bed.
Wow. Man, I do feel better.
BC gets up off the bed. He goes over to the sink in the room. They've provided soap, toothbrush, and toothpaste. There's a towel sitting folded in a small alcove over the sink. He washes and dries his face, brushes his teeth, and straightens out his clothes. BC pulls himself together. He walks to the room's door and presses the panel in the wall next to the door.
Let's see if they've locked me in.
The door slides open silently. The corridor outside is mostly gray. Gray carpeted floor, gunmetal gray ceiling, gray walls overlaid with white enamel. A thick navy blue stripe runs waist high along the wall in front of him.
So generic, it could be any civilian or military installation anywhere. Huh.
Anita, Krish, and Del are sitting in three of four gray easy chairs lined up against the wall across the corridor, to BC's right. They were talking together until BC poked his head out the door. Now they all sit silently, looking at BC.
Don't stop on my account, BC says into the awkward silence that fills the air.
You made it, Anita observes.
Hoping I wouldn't, BC cracks.
No, Anita sighs. Come here, sit down. BC walks over past Krish, Del, and Anita and sits in the empty chair in the end.
So what are you guys, Transspace, the next generation? BC jokes.
You laugh, but it is something like that. The Transspace Project is where it all began, Anita says. It's just expanded.
And we've lasted a lot longer than people thought we would.
Or did, Krish adds.
Why stop at Mars? Del asks in a serious tone.
Everyone else pauses. Anita and Krish both look at Del.
What? Del asks them. Too soon? He's to know at some point, right?
He finishes his sentence with a shrug.
Why stop at Mars?
BC asks back, repeating the question more than asking it himself.
That was Van Kilner's question, Krish says. That's what he asked way back when. We call it the big question.
The big question, Del emphasizes in his deep, somber voice.
The UTZ military needed to get back and forth between Earth and Mars, Anita explains. That's why they hired Van Kilner to start the project. The old Magloop highway was just too vulnerable and too inconvenient. You could use it for fast travel between Earth orbit and Mars orbit, but depending on where the planets were in their orbits, just getting to the loops could be a real pain.
They needed a faster way, more convenient, less vulnerable to attack, Del says. We gave them that, a better way to get to Mars, and that was all they wanted.
The military was going to shut the project down afterwards, Krish says.
But then Van Kilner asked the big question, Del says. Why stop at Mars?
Good question, BC agrees. But so far this is all pretty much public knowledge from history files, he says. Common knowledge.
Except for the big question, Del says. You see...
Del, hold on, okay? Anita asks, interrupting. Del nods and sits back. Campion, she says to BC, this is just the beginning of a lot of, well, lots and lots of information we need to brief you on. We should wait.
Huh?
BC asks, confused.
Why wait?
Do you want to sit twisted in these chairs in this corridor for hours, or would you rather find a comfortable conference room where we can talk to each other and not get stiff necks? She asks. I just didn't want Del to get rolling before seeing if we could move this down the hall, Anita explains.
Can we get something to eat? BC asks. Suddenly I'm starving.
Look who's feeling better, Anita says.
Sure, I think we can arrange that. After knocking you out and pumping your stomach and all, it's the least we can do.
The anti-reactive is restoring your inner balance, Krish assures BC.
Let's go then, Anita says. She stands up. How about the west side room? She asks Del and Krish.
That's a great idea, Del says, agreeing. You'll like the view there, he tells BC. Lots of windows looking out on deep space. Nice.
BC is amused.
First he's shooting me, then he's playing tour guide. I like the view, huh? Strange dude.
BC gets up. He follows the others as they head off down the corridor. He takes in the surroundings as they walk to the conference room.
Everything seems smaller, older than Lunar Prime. Well maintained, for sure, but older designs, smaller passages. This space has been here for a while.
The walk takes them down 4 corridors as they twist and turn their way towards the west side room.
I feel all turned around, like maybe we're circling back to where we started. And where is everybody else? There's nobody here. It can't be that thriving a place, unless they're shepherding me along an unused or predetermined route that avoids contact with other people. Or maybe these three are it. Maybe they are the whole project. They could be insane. The project could be a figment of fevered imagination, a product of...
Huh? Are you coming, Campion? Anita asks. She and the other two have gone ahead into what is presumably the west side room. BC stopped outside in the corridor.
Last time I walked through one of your doors here, I got shot, BC explains.
No one's going to shoot you, Anita says with a hint of exasperation in her voice. Come in here. BC walks through the door. No one shoots him. 3 of the 4 walls of the room are entirely transparent. The 3 walls in front of him provide an unlimited view of the dark surface of the moon and the carpet of stars of deep space. White exposed beams frame the roof, but the ceiling itself is also clear and full of stars.
We're definitely on the dark side of the moon. That makes sense, given what they've told me. What of you? I suppose it's never really dark. The carpet of night is always filled with stars, far as the eye can see.
Del sees BC gazing out.
What did I tell you? He says to him.
Well, gotta give it to him. I do like the view.
Nice, BC says, nodding.
Have a seat, BC, Anita says, indicating a chair at the oval table that dominates the room. The table is nearly as clear as the walls and ceiling, a translucent blue tint giving the surface an element of tangibility. The 5 chairs surrounding the table are covered in soft gray upholstery. BC crosses to the opposite side of the table and sits down facing the door. So, BC asks, where is everybody?
What?
Anita asks. This place is nearly abandoned, BC explains. I didn't see anybody else as we walked here. Where's everybody else? This can't be your main base.
It isn't, is it? BC challenges her.
Or should I be asking her where the rest of her imaginary friends are? Or maybe she'll ask me why I didn't see all those people we just passed in the halls. Then I'll know they're really insane.
You're pretty sharp there, Campion, Anita gives him credit. We now only use this base for little side projects and such, and right now, you're a little side project, she says with a smirk. I'm sorry if that deflates your overinflated sense of self-worth, she cracks.
I say, BC says.
And how am I supposed to take that?
Anita sits down at the table across from BC. Krish pulls up a chair at his left, Del at his right.
So why stop at Mars? BC prompts them.
Not so much asking the question as repeating their earlier comment.
Exactly, Anita says.
So your real base is out beyond Mars, BC tries.
This is a real base, Anita says defensively.
Right, BC answers sarcastically.
Right, boys? She asks Del and Krish.
Right? Krish snaps back.
Sure it is, Del agrees.
I thought it was truth-telling time, BC laments.
The truth must be revealed layer by layer, unfolding like an onion, Anita says.
Trying to sound deep, BC quips.
Well, I'm impressed,
Krish pipes up.
Shut up, Gandhi, she needles Krish.
Uh-oh, Krish says, must have hit a nerve. I only get the cute pet names when she's really getting mad, Krish smiles.
Anita scowls at him, but Krish just keeps grinning.
You know, this does remind me of an onion, BC says, changing his tone, because so far this stinks.
A moment of awkward silence follows his outburst.
Man, you sure are a buzz killer, Chris jokes to break the silence.
Del sits quietly, looking on. He has been since the onion thing comment.
BC glares at Anita.
I can play stare down with the best of them.
Chris looks back and forth between them, from Anita to BC. BC finally breaks his stare first.
Sorry, he says, relenting. Anita shakes her head and she relents. The tension dissipates.
We have another base, in the asteroids, Anita confesses. Part of it is adapted from the ruins of an old alien base we found.
An alien base? BC asks out loud in shock.
This is bigger than I thought.
Yes, we deal extensively with 2 major alien races and know many others, she tells him.
2? BC asks.
2. The Flays and the Domo. There are others out there, but our contact with them has been more limited, she explains. But the Flays and the Domo have been around our part of the galaxy for a long time, Anita says.
Longer than we have, she adds. We found an old abandoned Domo base when we got out to the asteroids. The project built our base up and around the alien original.
We, you 3? BC wonders aloud. Not me personally, Van Kilner, really, Anita says. He still leads the project, BC. Van Kilner lives out in the asteroids, at the base, where the low gravity helps keep him alive. Van Kilner's alive? I thought he was dead. Everybody thought he died when he disappeared back in... Oh. BC gets it. He can't return to even the moon's gravity now, Anita explains, so he stays out there, and most of the project is out there with him. We use this base as our local station, a place to keep our flashers, as you call them, and a base to work out of in the Earth system. This place, as you noted, isn't exactly hopping, but this is where it all started, and we do still use it.
So much for the onion, Del says under his breath. That onion thing is all unraveled, huh?
Krish cracks to Anita. BC sits, quietly stunned, trying to process the information just dumped on him. Okay, so, Van Kilner's alive on a secret asteroid base, hanging with aliens. Why should I buy that? Pretty wild story, if you ask me, BC says. Let's hear more. Not hanging with aliens, Anita sighs. Del's been with the project the longest. He can tell you how it all start. Krish cuts her off. Boy genius, you know, Krish interjects. He presses on.
Tell us about the early days of the project, won't you, Dr. Dondell?
Krish says to his tall friend in a mock news announcer voice. Anita shoots a nasty look at Krish. Del looks thoughtful.
Mulling it over, is he?
That was part one of Chapter 13 of Vatican Ambassador on Glow in the Dark Radio. Chapter 13, as it turns out, is an almost two-hour chapter, so I'm dividing it up. We'll end part one there. Now, despite the rough beginning, Del and Krish certainly seem to be more scientists than secret agents. Scientists who helped invent the transspace drive, evidently. And who asked, why stop at Mars? And who also have met aliens, apparently? Hopefully, after he mulls it over, Del will tell the story of the project, Van Kilner, and the aliens? Join us next time and find out on Glow in the Dark Radio. Again, a reminder, you can get a free graphic novel, the PDF version of Vatican Assassin, the graphic novel. It is free for podcast listeners and patrons exclusively. A limited amount of redemptions for a limited time. You want to act on this before November 1st. To get the discount, follow the link in the show notes, because the discount is tied to the link, so you can get it for free. I say discount, but it's 100% discount. It gets you it for free. That's at drivethroughcomics.com, but again, copy and paste that link or just click on it in the show notes to get the discount. And get the story from the first novel, told in comic book form. The artwork is by Christian Navarro and Juan Carlos Quatordio. Again, a big thank you to patrons who help keep this podcast going. My big thanks to you for helping support this on a monthly basis. If you're interested in becoming a patron, you can do so at patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio. And I have three different levels going, my $2 a month, $5, and $10 a month level to help support the podcast and get some extra stuff and early stuff as a result of being a supporter. And you get stuff like the free graphic novel. Of course, that's for podcast listeners, too, this month. And that is all for this week. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. We'll be back with part two of chapter 13 on our next episode. Thank you for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.
Glow in the Dark Radio.
This podcast presentation is copyright 2023 by Michael F. Luoma and is protected under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 4.0 International License, CC by NCND 4.0. Music by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his work at Incompetech.com. Mike's books are available in ebook, paperback, and audiobook, wherever you find books online. Get links and more details at glowinthedarkradio.com and mikeluoma.com. This has been a presentation of Glow in the Dark Radio.